how are the changes under Obamacare being responded to by doctors? Are doctors adjusting their practices to the new rules? And when they make those adjustments, do we, the patients, become collateral damage? Let's bring on the president of Private Practice Doctors. He's the cardiologist, Dr. Reed Wilson. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. This is the first time you've done one of these interviews about what we're going to talk about today. Is this some kind of an exclusive?
Well, I've been speaking about Obamacare for several years, and as things change, I've been speaking on it.
All right, so we're going to cross some bridges today, but let's start with the easy stuff. Tell us about Private Practice Doctors.
Private Practice Doctors is a group of approximately 200 physicians, mostly in California, but we have a few around the country, who have come together to try to basically lower our costs so we can stay in practice and stay in the private practice of medicine. We are expanding it to other areas, and we believe that the private practice of medicine is the key that maintains the doctor-patient relationship that you've come to learn and love and expect us to do with personalized care, something that is fast going away with Obamacare.
All right, but you could have given us that description prior to Obamacare as well, right?
I could have. It's just all the more necessary now that we are living in the days of Obamacare.
Okay, give us an idea of what we should know, the basic stuff. I know you have probably a handle on California. We have covered California. That's the state-run exchange that gets people into insurance here. You have a pretty good idea who's signed up and how many people have lost insurance, who's gaining, who's losing. Just give us a thumbnail.
Sure. It's estimated that all of the United States, between 6 and 10 million people have lost their insurance. Those are the people on the individual plans. If you had a plan via your company, you are very good chance of losing it at the end of 2014, as things now stand, unless they change that. But to date, about 6 to 10 million people have lost their insurance, and most of these are in the individual marketplace, people who went out and bought their own insurance. As of the first of this year, there are about 2 million people who signed up for a plan through the exchanges. Now, the individual marketplace people had to sign up through the exchanges. Some of them signed up directly on the website, although that was a catastrophe, but other people signed up through their insurance agents into this plan. But no one knows exactly how many people have paid yet because they weren't required to pay until late in January. Initially, if you didn't pay by December 15th, you didn't get insurance. Then they moved it again. But unless you pay, you don't have insurance. And it's a very difficult thing to get to pay because the back end of the Obamacare website isn't really working.
No, that's a problem.
Yeah. Additionally, 3.9 million people have signed up for what we call in California Medi-Cal or Medicaid, which used to be the insurance for the poor. But you could say, gosh, 3.9 million people, that's a lot. But most of those people are simply just renewing because they have to renew every year. So if you hear a large number that all these people are signing up, realize that a lot of these people are just re-signing up. And the most important part is most of those people who are re-signing up are getting subsidies. So there's not enough people to support the plan.
Let me go back to that 6 million number that you used, people that have lost their insurance. So do you have a feel for what percentage of those people had catastrophic insurance plans?
I don't know how many had a catastrophic, but there's almost no catastrophic coverage out there. Now, they did give a leeway. The president said unilaterally he made this rule by himself that he was going to allow some catastrophics to stay. But that's a plan that a lot of people like, particularly young people, because young people tend not to get sick.
Right.
But they do want to be covered if they have a big problem, which just makes sense. But now we're asking them to pay for things they don't need. I don't know how many single people need care for Parkinson's or something of old age. And I don't know. I personally, just going to personal issues, my wife and I can't have children anymore because of surgery she's had, and I'm expected to pay for baby care and
exactly.
Pregnancy. And so everybody has to be covered for everything, and this is not what people want. They want to be able to personalize their care, pick and choose what they want to be covered for. If you
right.
have a certain issue, why should you pay for it?
Doc, that's just it. It's like I'm a mid-30s, single guy, no kids, and I want to be able to kind of choose my own fate. So if I go to the doctor, whether I'm covered or not, I want to be able to make that decision. So why are they shoving this down our throat, for lack of a better term?
Oh, because they want everybody to have the same plan, and they want everybody to have the same coverage. And the wordage was that the plan you chose personally for you, it was just suboptimal. But no, it was really good because it's what you chose to have.
It's what you need.
It's what you need. And
everything you need, nothing you don't.
Right. And what they need to do this because they need to pay for the elderly, the young people. You're 30. You need to pay for some 65-year-old.
See, I don't like that at all.
It's and not only well, it's just a similar. You're also doing it in your taxes, but it's not right. It's because your demographic. If you go through the actual funds for and how much money your demographic has, you have less than the people you're paying for.
We're gonna find out and ask you in a bit how doctors are responding to this because my doctors have been telling me what they're going to do for a while, and we talked about this before we started the program. I guess we've all heard stories from our doctors, but we still want to kind of. Get up to that point. Aren't there people who were previously uninsured benefiting now because of Obamacare?
Yes, but it's not nearly as much as they thought it was. It's a very curious statistic. And McKinsey & Company did a survey, and they found that those who are eligible for the Obamacare exchanges who were not insured, only 11% of those bought new coverage between 2013 and 2014. Hmm. And two small insurance companies told the Wall Street Journal on January 17th, that only 25 to 35% of those purchasing their policies were previously uninsured. People, there's a lot of group of people out there who don't want insurance. You know, there is a fallacy on who the uninsured are. A significant number of them were illegals, and a significant of them number of them were people between 50, earning between 50K and 70K and young who just, you know, they had other issues they wanted to spend their money on, their choice.
And they want to take their chances.
And they would say, look, I'll just get something super catastrophic, or I'm just going to sit there and I'm not sick. And they just didn't do it. That was their choice. Now, they had the money to do it. If you were making $70,000 and you're single, you could have afforded it. You just chose not to do it. Those people still aren't going to do it.
Yeah. Now, premiums have gone up fairly quickly since the exchanges opened up.
Yes.
I've gone on there and shopped around, and if I were in the market for insurance, my premiums would be about triple what I'm paying now.
Whoa.
I have a relationship with a performers union. The insurance is negotiated through a collective bargaining agreement with the company that I work for. So the premium that I pay, and I can't tell you what the contribution is from either the union or the employer, but the premium that I pay is for a quarter, for 3 months, less than what I could pay for if I wanted the same coverage through the exchange, less than what I would pay for a one-month premium.
Well, I suspect that's because your plan is more catered to you, the individual, and they're able to do this. They don't have to cover everybody. Plus, not only are you covering yourself in their plan, you're covering an older person as well. That's why the extra cost. They've done statistics, and they asked, if you got an Obamacare bronze plan, which is the very lowest level possible plan, it's not a good plan, you pay 40% of the cost of a visit, and they pay 60, so it's a 60-40 plan. You will pay roughly, on average, $5,081 a year, which is 42% higher than the average of a deductible for an individual-based plan previously, which was $3,589. That's the cheapest plan. They did a survey. The Manhattan Institute did a survey, and their premiums by Obamacare per in 49 of the states that they surveyed was 41% increase.
Hmm. All right, wow. So all of this affects individuals. What doctors do to respond to this affects individuals. I can tell you that I've spoken to all of my doctors about this, or in some cases, they brought it up to me because, you know, I'm the radio guy. They'll say, so what do you think of Obamacare?
Right.
Just one of those loaded questions.
I've been getting that, too.
Really, all they want to do is tell me what they think. But my main doctor pretty much has implied that he's going to go cash and carry at some point. Another one of my doctors, a specialist, has told me that he's just going to retire early.
My doctor's retiring, too.
Yeah.
And he's only in his 50s.
Another doctor, he's concerned about some of the forms and the definitions, and without us becoming too esoteric in the in that category of forms and definitions and that sort of thing, he's concerned now when somebody comes in and sees the first doctor and is diagnosed, then that doctor sends them to somebody who's a specialist, whereas that appointment in the past, and this is according to my doctor friend, that second appointment in the past would have been coded as an initial visit, and the doctor would have made money at a certain level. Well, now, in many cases, that second visit will be treated just as such, a second visit, a secondary visit, and the doctor will be compensated at a lower rate. And that's one of his biggest concerns because those are the types of appointments he most often has.
Well, the problem is, and this is the dirty little secret, that no one is talking about in the paper. It's just starting to get out there. In fact, if you look on February 4th in the LA Times, they just started mentioning it, is that doctors are not taking the plan. It's like having an ATM card with no machine. You can show everybody your bright new card, but if it doesn't have any cash in the machine, there's no one going to take it. And doctors are not taking it. Look, I have about 200 physicians in my organization. I personally have talked to recently about 50 to 60 of them. Exactly zero of them are going to take the plan.
Why?
Because the reimbursement rates are simply so low that we will be paying you to come to our office. And it's not worth it. Basically, in order for this to work, they have to narrow down the network of physicians that they're going to have in each plan. And those physicians, how they've made an agreement, basically, we will increase your volume, but you're going to have to take less. So these are very small networks of physicians who are willing to, first of all. And secondly, the vast majority of doctors are not even going to take it. In a recent survey, remember, this is California. This is a rather pro-Obamacare state. 70% of the physicians said they will not participate. If you wish to go to our major hospitals in our local area, if let's say Cedars, and you have Anthem Blue Cross from Obamacare, you cannot be seen. They are going to take Health Net. There's a severe limitation, and people are beginning to complain. There was just a guy in Rhode Island who would, every basically hospital in his area was not a member, and he'd have to drive 40 miles to get care.
Is this only because so few people have signed up so it doesn't have the money to?
No.
It's not the quantity that they were hoping
for? Insurance companies have basically mapped out what they think the costs are going to be, and it's already proven to be wrong. But this is a side note. Humana, just because very few companies are willing to say what it is, Humana has just come out and basically said, we're going to get $250 million to $450 million back from the government because we're going to lose that money. So this is just one insurance company. So who's going to pay for that $500 million just in 1 year, just from one insurance company? You and I. So it's not a matter of just too few people signing up, because eventually almost everybody is going to have to sign up. It's a function of the fact that they are providing very cheap care. And if you're going to provide cheap care, you're going to have to be able to have physicians accept very cheap rates.
Let me take you through a scenario, hypothetical. Let's say it's been about 11 months since I've seen my doctor. I've been healthy, but I try to get a physical once a year. So I make my appointment, I show up, it's been a year, and things have changed in the doctor's office, and as you described, 70% in California, the doctors you've surveyed are not accepting the plan, not accepting Obamacare, and my doctor is one of those 70%. So what can I expect now in terms of the business transaction of my physical exam?
Well, one of two things is going to happen. A, you might be lucky enough to have a physician who participates on your end lucky, but not actually lucky, because you are going to be in a waiting room lasting with a bunch of other people trying to get to see a doctor. So expect your wait time for your physical exam to be markedly elevated, because remember, he has to see a huge volume in order for you to be semi-successful.
Does that affect the patient-doctor relationship?
It has to, because he has no time. And remember, it's going to count against him if he starts sending you to a lot of specialists, a lot of tests. He's going to be monitored very closely. So if you have a bad headache and you need an MRI, he might not order it, because that won't be thought of highly.
Right. Whereas in the past, CYA, you know, you have to do the MRI. If you go in with a headache or chest pain, they're going to do all those tests just to make sure that they're not liable.
And with my doctor, there's an MRI in the back on Saturdays, and I could just go around the back and get it on the spot. But I wonder if that's going to change.
Ultimately, what's going to happen is that you're going to have to make, for those people who have Obamacare, and that's going to be more and more people. Remember, roughly 50 to 100 million people starting in 2014 will have it. They're going to have to make a choice. Do they want to pay cash at a reduced rate to see their doctor, which is what I'm offering my patients? I will continue to see you, but I can't do it for that insurance rate, and I'm not billing your insurance to balance bill it. it's just a cash, a lower cash transaction, or do you want to try to find a doctor who is able to see you?
Now, in the Affordable Care Act, is there any language that addresses doctors who opt not to participate? Is there any kind of a fine for not playing?
Not right now. But just released today, and it's very disconcerting, released today, there's starting to be a backlash about this, about the number of physicians and its very fine networks that they're doing, and the CMS, or you know, the health department of the government is starting to notify insurance networks that they must provide adequate amounts of physicians and hospitals in their network. Now, they say they're going to review this and they will take appropriate action. I don't know quite what that means or what they're going to do, but if they do that, they're going to have to raise the rates at which they pay physicians and hospitals, which will then blow the entire budget completely away. The other thing that's going to happen is if they don't have enough physicians, and we're already, without Obamacare, we were already supposed to see tens of thousands of physician shortages within the next 10 years. There's a high probability that you will not see your doctor on your physical exam. You will see a nurse practitioner. That's the only, if you're going to enlarge a network with cheaper individuals, you're going to, and there's already laws going out there in multiple states to allow nurse practitioners basically to act like physicians. I think this is a terrible mistake. Look, I went through 4 years of medical school. I did a year of residency, internship after that. I did 2 years of residency after that, and I did 3 years of cardiology fellowship after that. It's 10 years of education after college. I think my judgment's a little different. I've been in practice for 27 years. I think my judgment's just a little different than a nurse practitioner.
Right?
Yeah.
You know?
And if I'm going to pay the full pop, I want the doctor.
Right. And it's not like, we were talking about this earlier. It's not like medical school is getting any easier or any cheaper or it's taking a shorter amount of time. Well,
the average physician, an average doctor coming out of medical school, which means half have, you know, this is average, so half will have more debt, has $175,000 of debt coming out of school, and you don't want to pay him. He's got to pay back his debt. So you have a choice. You can get a whole bunch of foreign medical graduates. I mean, this is nothing against foreign medical graduates, but they have a different cost structure when you're trained in another country, and their knowledge base is different. Or you can get a substandard American, I'm sorry to say substandard, but nurse practitionerly trained person to take care of you.
Yeah, training standard, not
the
personal.
Person. It's a training standard.
Yeah, and so basically you're saying if I go to the doctor, stuff's going to fall through the cracks that might lead me to get really sick.
I agree, and we're going to end up with a two-tiered system where 80% of people will have government health care and 15 to 20% of people are willing to pay, and you will pay. If you think something's really wrong, you're going to go outside of the system and see someone who you trust.
The elite tier. What about emergency rooms? Any change there?
You know what? Very fascinating. They did a study in Oregon, and because they wanted to provide Obamacare before Obamacare, but they didn't quite have enough money. So they had almost like a lottery to determine who was going to get this care and who wasn't. So they had an automatic double-blind study, and they said, who used the emergency room more? Who lived longer? Well, it turned out there was no difference in using the emergency room. It's one of the reasons we're trying to use Obamacare. And there was no difference in how long they lived, depending on if you got this basic sub-level care or didn't get it. So the purpose of providing things, it didn't work. Our emergency rooms are going to be even more crowded.
And they're really crowded now. It's bad, especially here in Southern California. It's disgusting. And I hate going through there, man. I got to be honest.
Not only that, you are getting charged about three times as much as you would in a doctor's office. There's a special rule that if you go into a hospital, they can charge you legally roughly about three times as much as they charge you in your own doctor's office for the same test. For example, I do echocardiograms in my office. If you get it done in my office, same machine, because I asked the hospital which machine they use, and I happen to use the same one, the cost is a few hundred dollars. If you get that same exact test, same exact machine, read by a board-certified cardiologist, same, it's over $1,500. Same test.
Are hospitals in the same boat or of the same mind that the doctors that you're describing are? Is there a chance that we're going to have to cash and carry at the hospital at some point as well?
Yes, because most of the super hospitals are limiting which of these insurance plans are taking. They can't afford it as well. So most of them are severely limiting. It used to be if you took your insurance card to any hospital, you could get seen. Basically, that was the answer. Now it's usually one or two of these California Care or whatever Obamacare, whatever state you're in, plans, and that's the only one you can be seen. Frequently, it's one insurance type per hospital.
It's the future. It's going to be interesting to see. I read a survey that says 9 of 10 physicians are unwilling to recommend healthcare as a profession to a family member now.
I told my nephew not to.
Yeah. And I mean, so what?
I do the same thing with radio. Go be something else.
Do something else. But yeah, this is catastrophic for the medical field. Well, if we already need, something like 900,000 more doctors, or 93,000.
There's only 900,000 doctors in the United States, but yeah.
But we're going to need like 10% more over the next 20 years even to keep up.
It used to be that the best and the brightest wanted to go into medicine.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to say, I can see the difference in the quality just by looking at the people I'm training, but I give talks, and I was recently in an audience of about 100 people, all ages, and I frequently ask the question. I said, please raise your hand if you or your a family member of yours or your kid is going to go into medicine. And for these were middle-class people, they would say one person raised his hand. He says, my 8-year-old son wants to be a doctor.
Oh.
And I thought that was very nice. I wanted to be a fireman at that
time. Yeah, exactly. Right? I wanted to be Spider-Man.
But, what's the chance of that one kid wanting to be? But this was all ages, and there was no one wanting to go. I mean, they all wanted guys go into finance or Hollywood, I guess. I don't know. But it used to be the best and the brightest wanted to go into medicine. And gosh, it was a beautiful field. You could do so much. They're just tearing us apart.
Now, can I, and you know, I know this is a little bit off topic, and feel free not to answer this, but President Barack Obama, he's the one that's really pushing, and he's the one that's, you know, dug in the ground and saying this is going to happen. You know, and a lot of presidents look in their second term for their legacy. Now, his first, you know, the first part of his administration, obviously, he was the first black president the United States has had. Is this something that, you know, the history books are going to write about, like, or that he sees himself saying, I gave the United States Obamacare?
Look, I personally think this is a disaster. I think you're going to see in the 2014 elections tremendous, I'm not a politician, but I think tremendous ramifications. But look, to me, this is not a political issue. Who's right and who's wrong? To me, I see patients every day. Before I got on the phone with you, I was just discussing this with a patient who has been through hell and high water, and now they're asking for their medications, and they don't have a doctor to go to because they have this plan. I'm dealing this with this on a personal level. To me, this is a personal thing. I have some patients where I've dealt with their grandparents, the parents, and their children. I take care of 3 generations. Mm. This is a work of love for me, and to tell them I can't do this anymore. If that's his legacy, that doesn't speak highly.
You know what? You have to wonder who didn't see this coming, because back before the Affordable Care Act became law, the AMA, the American Medical Association, came out in favor of passing.
You have to remember who the American Medical Association is. It is estimated that somewhere between only 12-17% of doctors belong to the American Medical Association. Everybody thinks that this is a group that represents the doctors, but it is not true. They represent a vast minority. Most of these are retired. Many of these are medical students. And that they do not get their funding from the doctors, therefore. They get their funding from the government. And what they're responsible for is they are given a monopoly on the codes that doctors use for diagnosis, for billing. And the government could take that away anytime they want to. It's worth tens of millions of dollars. And so when the government says, we want to do this, the AMA is going to say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Mm-hmm. You can't bite the hand that feeds you. Right. You don't want to do that.
And you have to also realize what's going on in our education system. If you teach everybody that they need to be employees, doctor employees, that the only future is working in this system. That's what they're taught. Remember, they're taught only by university people. They're not taught by the private practitioners. That's what you're going to get. When you have a back in 2000, 70% of doctors owned their own practice, but currently, and we're trending down, only 30% do. Remember, we're seeing a tremendous fall in that private practice position. I gave a talk in Stanford, and it was a debate, what was more compassionate, private care or government care? And you sort of like to know your audience before you do a debate. So we asked the question, where would you rather have surgery? Mind you, this is Stanford, and the audience is a group of Stanford faculty and students. These are not dummies. And we asked the question, where would you rather have surgery, Canada or the United States? Two-thirds of the people raised their hand for Canada. Mm. This is at one of our best universities. This is what the kids and faculty are learning and teaching. So what outcome do you expect?
And people are going to start enjoying the outcomes anytime soon, especially if doctors are going to take the path that you suggest. Is it possible that if more and more doctors don't play and do cash and carry, perhaps open up little boutique practices at some point, that we'll get to the other side of the hill and all of a sudden we'll be in this medical practice nirvana, maybe not so much unlike how things were back before everybody had health insurance and before Medicare and Medicaid and all of that?
I think that's going to be true for, like I said, the 15% to 20% of people, but there's going to be a whole bunch of people who are going to be very unhappy because Americans have been trained to expect the best when they go to their doctor, whether they're John D. Rockefeller or John Q. Public. And that is not going to happen anymore. They're going to be, most of the time, in a government-based, one single-payer system, and then there'll be the other system. It'll be sort of a very English-type system where you have Harley Street, which is sort of the high-end, and when you're sick, you go that way.
You've been practicing for 27 years.
Yes.
You going to stick with it? You going to get out?
I'm staying here because hey, I like what I do, but I'm not going to pay people to come to my office.
I have a feeling your Medicare payments might be delayed based on our conversation today.
I don't know. We might be listened to right now from the special wall speakers.
Uh-oh.
But Medicare, you have to realize, speaking of Medicare, in order to pay for Obamacare, they took $500 billion out of Medicare over the next 10 years.
Wow. Dr. Reed Wilson, got to leave it there.
Okay.
Cardiologist, thank you very much. President
Thanks,
of the Private Practice Doctors.